Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. We head to the good martini, and Donald Trump was in Iowa again yesterday, held a big rally in Dubuque, and as is his custom, he holds a press conference before these big rallies, and Jorge Ramos of Fusion really was interested in getting his line of questioning in for Mr. Trump and decided not to wait to be called on, and here's how that played out.
Okay, who's next? Yeah, please. Excuse me, sit down. You weren't called. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Go ahead. No, you don't. You haven't been called. Go back to Univision. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. You cannot deny citizenship to children. Sit down, please. You weren't called.
So his security ushered Ramos out. That became a huge media issue yesterday. Towards the end of the press conference, he let him back in. They had a fairly extensive back and forth. Obviously, Ramos also is affiliated with Univision, as you heard Trump say, and there's a big lawsuit there after Univision dumped the Miss USA or Miss Universe pageant, one of the two, in response to Trump's opening comments about the type of people coming across the border. Jim, say what you will about Donald Trump. He knows how to control the room.
Longtime listeners know my regular stance on Trump, but he's completely in the right here. Ramos, as I wrote in the Morning Jolt and posted in the corner today, he self-describes himself as an activist slash journalist, and he's been asking Trump for an interview for a long time. Trump says no. Trump is under no obligation to give him an interview. And in fact, when Ramos has called Trump the strongest voice for hate and division in the country right now, if you call a guy that, I think he's got every right in the world to say, no, I'm not going to do your interview. Then at this event, Trump is actually pointing to some other reporter, and Ramos just gets up, and you can't hear the audio that well, but it sounds like Ramos is just giving him a diatribe. That is not asking a question. That is not journalism. That's heckling. Trump and the event organizers and security guys have every right in the world to say, look, you don't get the heckler's veto here. You know, and it's fascinating. I got into an argument with the guy in The Economist this morning. He says, well, you know, Trump doesn't have the right. The issue is removing journalists from the room, and that's not correct. I'm like, okay, well, what is he supposed to do there? And he says, well, he should have asked him to sit down. Well, he did. He says he should have turned to another journalist. He did. Some people are really giving Trump grief about this for not doing exactly what he actually did, which kind of suggests that maybe some people opine about things without actually watching the video. How often, Greg, do we get to say that Donald Trump is the voice of decorum and manners and professionalism?
Yeah, he was pretty patient with him, I thought, because he just wouldn't stop talking. And obviously, there's got to be an order to a press conference or else it's just chaos.
And then, of course, he invites him back and they have a pretty decent back and forth. And so actually, I'll give Ramos a few molecules of credit for recognizing how he's supposed to act. The fascinating thing is the degree to which people want to say, ah, this is quasi-dictatorial Trump using Stasi tactics on a journalist. He doesn't. No, like, Ramos was, you know, just simply not respecting the process of a press conference to work. You got to wait your turn. Remember when Neil Munro of the Daily Corner yelled out at Obama and people yes. said there's no room for that. When Joe Wilson yelled out, you lied. If everybody's shouting at once, nobody can hear each other. There's no actual discourse. There's no exchange of ideas. So kudos to Donald Trump. Obviously, I think this was fantastic for him. I'm sure everybody who hates him is still going to hate him over this, and everybody who loves him is still going to love him. But in this case, I think Trump is completely in the right, and he kind of illuminates there's a certain arrogance on the part of some corners of the press corps.
Trump does show on occasion, we talked about yesterday, the polar opposite of this, but on some occasions he shows how candidates and political figures who are being badgered by the media should be able to take control of the situation, or maybe not even the media. Bernie Sanders might want to take a couple of notes on how Trump handled that yesterday. Now on to the bad martini and how not to accuse the media of trying to take on some sort of agenda. Ted Cruz was on The Kelly File with Megyn Kelly last night, and they were talking about immigration because Cruz has largely said he aligns himself pretty closely with what Trump has said. And they were specifically talking about birthright citizenship, the desire to end that, and what that would look like. So here's Kelly's initial question.
I'll ask you the same question that was asked here yesterday of Mr. Trump on Fox News, which is, if you had a husband and a wife who are illegal immigrants and they have two children who are here, who are American citizens, would you deport all of them? Would you deport the American citizen children?
Cruz then went on to say that he would secure the border and he would streamline legal immigration, which led to this response from Kelly.
But that doesn't sound like an answer. Mr. Trump answered that question explicitly last night on the O'Reilly Factor. Will you do so now?
Well, Megan, what I'm doing is answering what I think Congress should do.
And he goes on to talk about different ways to make sure the border is secure. So Megyn Kelly tries a third time, and this is where the back and forth really kicked in.
Unlike you, you're dodging my question. What, you don't want to answer that question?
No, he says he would. But Megan, I'm
Donald
not
Trump
playing
says
the game.
They're all gone under his policy. What would a President Cruz do? Do the American citizen children of two illegal immigrants who are born here, the children, do they get deported under a President Cruz?
Megan, I get that that's the question you want to ask. That's also the question every mainstream media liberal journalist wants to ask. They focus exclusively on the 12 million people. It is a distraction from how we actually solve the problem. You know, it's also the question Barack Obama wants to focus on.
Why is it so hard? Why don't you just say yes or no?
Because, Megan, we need to solve the problem. And the way you solve the problem is you focus where there's bipartisan agreement first.
Jim, obviously, Cruz and Scott Walker and a couple others who are in favor of revoking birthright citizenship believe that if you do secure the border and streamline legal immigration and do a few other things, that the birthright citizenship problem will take care of itself. But to say that that is an unfair or a gotcha or a liberal question, that is a very fair question, and you should have an answer for it.
The between the lines of the Cruz answer there is like, look, Megan, that's a hard question. And I don't want to deal with that right now. I want to focus on the easy questions where we have bipartisan consensus. That's my Ted Cruz impression right there. I'm actually of the mindset that what the Constitution says, if you're born here on U.S. soil, you're a U.S. citizen. I think it's fair to ask whether the founding fathers would have wanted that to be the case, or whether when we've ended up in a circumstance in which there are so many benefits that come to with being an American compared to these other countries in which you're oppressed and you're not allowed to pursue your dreams and your economic opportunities are limited, that people would be trying to sneak into the country to have a child and then someday down the road use that U.S. citizen child as a way to get themselves on the road to citizenship. We've seen the sheer numbers. We're talking tens of thousands of people. I think it's fair to look at this and say, wait a minute, this is not really what was set up to what our founding fathers intended. This is an unseen consequence that maybe we need to revise. That question being put to Ted Cruz, look, if you want to deport people who are here illegal, who have children who are U.S. citizens, do you send the kids back to their home country with them, or do you keep the kids here? Do you put them into orphanages? Well, what do you do with that? That is a real-world consequence to the policy that Cruz and Trump want to enact. They got to have an answer to that. Now, Trump's pretty clear. We'll send the kids back. And that might be the best and most humane policy there. But if you're Ted Cruz and you want to push that, you got to own that. You got to be straight up about, I recognize what the consequence of my policies are going to be, and this is it. And it might look mean and nasty and cruel and all that, but we have to have consequences to these laws if we want to have them enforced this way. And I think the whole thing, it's a liberal journalist question, or it's the question Obama wants. Look, for some reason, I don't know if he's like trying to emulate Trump by going after Megyn Kelly or what the deal is, but that's a liberal journalist question is turning into the new, I don't like that question, and thus I prefer to make you the issue instead of what you just asked me about.
Yeah, it's an interesting development on a couple of fronts, because obviously I think a lot of conservatives are sympathetic to the position, as you very well explained, that birthright citizenship is not a good policy going forward. And at the same time, Ted Cruz has well established a reputation of articulately and directly addressing critical issues in a way that a lot of conservatives respond to well. But for whatever reason, and I think you perhaps touched on a couple of them, he just did not want to go there last night. And it was very different than the Ted Cruz that we're used to and often appreciate. So very interesting to see how that will play out. A lot of people still scrambling to respond to Trump, just like we mentioned with Walker yesterday. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And this is courtesy of Jazz Shaw at Hot Air, as well as the New York Times. It appears that Huma Abedin is blaming her loss of reputation on the proper source, Jim. It's really Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, who asked the State Department to produce documents related to her time working for the agency. This is the letter sent to Grassley from Abedin's lawyer, according to the New York Times. A lawyer for Huma Abedin, top advisor to Hillary Rodham Clinton, has accused Charles E. Grassley, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, of damaging Ms. Abedin's reputation through unfounded allegations about her time at the State Department. The lawyer, Miguel Rodriguez, sent a letter to the State Department on Friday, responding forcefully to two sets of questions posed by Mr. Grassley, whether Ms. Abedin, while a State Department official, had been overpaid during her maternity leave and vacation, and whether she had demonstrated a conflict of interest by aiding one of her part-time employers through her work at the State Department. And Jashaw goes on to explain why the details are pretty murky here and may not even be on Abedin's side when it comes to how she was compensated and how she somehow never took any vacation time while she was having a baby and so forth. Jim, but when you look at Huma Abedin's life over the past few years and why her reputation might be headed towards the shredder, there's a lot of better targets to look at than Chuck Grassley.
I don't want to be snide. I don't want to be rude or obnoxious, but, you know, ma'am, you married Anthony Weiner. If you're really that worried about your reputation, you know, Grassley, he's not the problem here, ma'am. I'm sorry. Don't need to rehash everything, but, you know, there was the Weiner scandal. She stayed married to him. They decided they wanted to work through their problems, and God bless them. If you could overcome that, great. He ran for mayor. They got the glossy photo spread in the New York magazines, and then it turned out he was doing the same thing all over again. If you're really that worried about your reputation, Ms. Abedin, you might have bigger problems. Things Chuck Grassley is saying. Chuck Grassley is just doing his job, all right? I'd say you made your bed and you chose to sleep in it, but maybe I just want to forget all nocturnal metaphors here. just say, like, there you go.
Yeah, and of course, I first of all, I applaud you by avoiding the term Carlos Danger during that entire response.
There you go.
And her lawyer might be better spending his time figuring out how Humat Abedin handled her private email account while working at the State Department and what kind of information passed through there.
If you're working for the federal government, you don't really get to have an outside job, right? Particularly not anything resembling lobbying or special interest or that. Except for her. She got some sort of like special dispensation. And nobody's really ever explained why she got that, why she's so special. She's allowed to work for, you know, as the right-hand woman of Hillary Clinton at the State Department and do lobbying at the same time. Like, it just seems like the most glaring, giant, flashing neon sign, conflict of interest. But yeah, no, Chuck Grassley is the real problem. Yeah, he's the bad guy.
Gee, I wonder where she learned that conflict of interest style from. Might be her boss. Anyway, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.